Welcome to the Sports Law Biz Podcast, dedicated to helping people better understand the law and business of sports. I'm your host, Peter Ott, and we've got a lot to talk about here today, so why don't we just jump in? Hello, I'm here today to talk about Deflategate with Ian Gunn, a New Orleans attorney and a 2014 graduate of Tulane Law School. Ian is also a staff writer for the website The Sports Esquires, which is a great resource for sports law issues. They are always among one of the first public places to find sports law documents and legal filings, and they also provide great legal analysis. To start off, Ian, can you introduce yourself so we can better get to know you?
Sure. I grew up in New Orleans and spent my whole life here and have mostly worked in football and basketball in the sports law world. And now I'm with the Sports Esquires. I've got a weekly column where I review all the sports law issues going on nationwide. And so I see and read a little bit of everything. And of course, I, you know, help to edit the other articles we write and do some writing myself. So that's a little bit about me, and you know, appreciate being on here and you having me on here, Peter.
Yeah, I'm really happy to have you on because you're one of the, you know, visible experts out there on Twitter and in other places talking about this issue. It's certainly a hot topic, and it seems fitting that the first Sports Law Biz podcast be about it. You've been following this case since the beginning, like I said, you're a great Twitter follow, and you've written some important articles about it on the Sports Esquires, particularly since the oral arguments happened in federal court. Your recent analysis of Judge Berman's decision favoring Brady and its implications are found on the Sports Esquires website, and I'll link to it when I post this podcast. So I think most of the people listening to this will be familiar with the coverage on ESPN and other places about Deflategate, but can you briefly bring us up to speed about why this case was in court in the first place?
Sure. I mean, so everybody knows kind of the story about, you know, the Colts tipping off the NFL to the deflated balls and maybe themselves being tipped off by the Ravens. And so, you know, the Super Bowl's over and everything, and Roger Goodell hires Ted Wells to investigate this whole thing. The interesting thing is that Goodell hired Wells to investigate it as kind of a way to distance himself and the league from the investigation, to kind of make things appear independent. And so in a way, they kind of, in an attempt to be more independent, they invite these, you know, problems on themselves because they've gone about it in the wrong way. And then, you know, Goodell delegates his authority to Troy Vincent to punish Brady, you know, who then punishes Brady based upon the Wells report. And then, you know, Brady appeals to Goodell. Now, at this point, Goodell has another chance to kind of avoid some of the issues that are going to be coming up because the Players Association asks Goodell to recuse himself and to appoint someone else who's a neutral arbitrator. And, of course, as we all know, Goodell refuses. So, you know, he could have avoided some of the issues about partiality, fairness. At the very least, you know, he kind of could have put the blame onto someone else, like a neutral arbitrator, and say, look, it was, you know, we did the right thing. We distance ourselves from this case. It's the neutral arbitrator who screwed up. And then it's not the, you know, the reputation of the league and the reputation of Goodell at stake in this arbitration. But of course, you know, Goodell wants to do it himself and he keeps it with him. And, you know, the other thing too is a neutral arbitrator could have eliminated this whole need for litigation in the first place, because if the neutral arbitrator looks at it, he might say, well, I don't really see a whole lot there in the Wells report. And so I'm going to reduce or vacate Brady's suspension completely. So, you know, when you kind of look at the process each step of the way, the NFL is kind of setting itself up for failure just by these boneheaded moves they did. So Goodell keeps it. He upholds the suspension. And now we're in court. And of course, again, another opportunity where the NFL kind of unintentionally shot itself in the foot. They rushed to go to court, you know, to avoid Minnesota, where Judge Doty is there, who's hearing the Adrian Peterson case and is viewed as a very player-friendly judge. So they rushed to file in New York. They beat the Players Association. And of course, you know, what happens in Minnesota when the Players Association files? The case doesn't even go to Judge Doty. So it goes to a different judge. And, you know, who knows what that judge would have found? Maybe that judge is not player-friendly at all. But because the NFL files first, the Minnesota judge kicks it back over to New York, and they wind up with Judge Berman, and it becomes a classic case of, you know, be careful what you wish for. So, you know, then Judge Berman gets it, and Judge Berman, as we all have heard, you know, wants to push settlement and push settlement. And I think, you know, regardless of the basic facts of this case, settlement may not have happened anyway because, you know, these two parties, the union and the league, they have, you know, have been bitterly fighting for decades, and especially over the last 4 or 5 years since the last CBA. But then you look at the particular facts of this case, make it even worse. You know, Brady testifies under oath at the arbitration hearing before Goodell. I didn't do anything wrong. And then Goodell and the NFL find Brady did something wrong. So when you're talking about a settlement, the league and Goodell, they want to save face and they want to say, we didn't screw up in this decision. And Brady wants to say, well, look, I want to protect my reputation and I also don't want to perjure myself. So there's not really any settlement ground that can be reached. And in fact, you look at some of the media reports that came out, you know, after settlement talks kind of ended, and it looks like the NFL didn't even offer Brady an offer. And the closest they came to suggesting something was like reducing it to 3 games, which is kind of a joke of a settlement offer, you know, when the original punishment is 4 games. So, you know, there is no settlement, and Berman is kind of forced against his will, kicking and screaming, dragging his feet to rule. And so that's where we are with Berman's ruling coming out this past week.
Okay, so that raises some interesting issues. You know, obviously it was difficult for the NFL and Brady to reach a settlement based on their positions and things like that. But why do you think Judge Berman was so focused on encouraging settlement?
Well, I think there's a couple reasons. One, you know, everyone, I think maybe this gets talked about too much, but, you know, no judge wants to get overturned on appeal. There's varying degrees of, you know, preference for that. Some judges don't really care. Some judges are very attentive to it. I don't know, you know, what Judge Berman's stance on that is or how he feels about it personally, but certainly no judge wants to get overturned on appeal. And the best way to avoid that is to avoid ruling at all. But to a certain extent, too, settling saves the court system some time. You don't have to put your staff to work. You don't have to work. You know, the more people settle, the more you save public use of funds, public employees' work time, and also you're saving the parties money and time as well. You know, if Goodell and Brady were able to work this out and settle it before it ever went to court, then so much money would have been saved on behalf of the league, on behalf of the Players Association, and court costs and attorney's fees. So, of course, Berman is trying to say, look, this is better for everybody if we can just settle. I don't have to worry about being overturned. My staff doesn't have to do all the work on this. You guys don't have to waste money. You know, so there's a lot of reasons why Berman kind of wants to settle. And it may just be that he thinks, look, it's always better when parties can work things out on their own instead of the legal system forcing, you know, one party to do something it doesn't want. You know, if you can find an amicable solution that both parties like, that tends to be better than saying, look, we're laying down a law, you have to do this. So I think that's kind of the various factors and underlying motivations for why he wants to settle.
Right, yeah. And I think that's true. There's the general preference for settling, and then, yeah, these more specific reasons that you gave. Okay, now let's talk about Judge Berman's decision itself. Why do you think that he vacated Goodell's ruling?
Well, you know, I think that Judge Berman says, look, I understand that, you know, and the NFL has argued throughout that there's great deference to arbitration awards that are appealed to courts. And the judge understands it's not my role to usurp the arbitrator's role. It's generally the province of the arbitrator to properly determine witnesses, evidence, and apply law of the shop precedent. But I think Judge Berman thinks that, look, there are some serious, as he called it, legal deficiencies that were present in Goodell's ruling and Goodell's actions in the arbitration hearing. And that's kind of why you can appeal arbitration decisions. That's why arbitrators are not the final say, is because there is some sort of basic standards that arbitrators have to follow, and the court is there to enforce them. And if there are serious deficiencies in how the arbitrator rules, then, you know, the court has to be there to check that. You know, we can't have some sort of unelected and unappointed non-government official just deciding law willy-nilly. And so I think Judge Berman thinks, look, there's a limited but certainly important role for the court in reviewing arbitrators, and so I need to step in and enforce that when it's not followed in this case. So the first thing that Berman finds is wrong with how Goodell punished Brady is this idea of proper notice. And this is a very nuanced and complex issue. So Berman determines first, he relies on some previous cases that have happened between the NFL and players, that it's the law of the shop to provide professional football players with advance notice of the conduct that's not allowed and the potential discipline for that conduct. And law of the shop is just a fancy word for saying, you know, what's the historical precedent under the CBA. So that's kind of what that means. But the basically, the arbitrator has to apply the collective bargaining agreement in accordance with the law of the shop. And so, you know, Berman quotes from several previous arbitrators kind of backing this up. And he finds that, you know, Brady had no notice that he could receive a 4-game suspension for being generally aware of deflation. And he finds that Brady had no notice that he could be suspended for non-cooperation with the investigation. In fact, Berman went so far as to say, look, the NFL has never punished a player for this kind of general awareness standard of the violation of someone else. The NFL's never had a standard where if you're aware of someone else's violation, you can be punished for that. And so the other thing Berman kind of homes in on is this kind of comparison that Goodell makes that ball deflation is similar to steroids and taking performance-enhancing drugs. And so Berman said, look, no player would have had some sort of awareness or notice that he could be punished under the steroid, you know, types of punishments just for being aware of ball deflation before a game. And certainly the league had never punished any player for that sort of thing before. So I think Berman, you know, relies on Second Circuit precedent here to an extent too, because what he does is he looks at what the Wells report finds, which is the Wells report finds that Brady had some general awareness that this was going on. And then he looks at what Goodell found. And Goodell says, well, I relied on the Wells report. But Goodell finds that Brady participated in a scheme, not merely that he was generally aware. And so Berman looks at that and says, well, where did this leap come from? He called it a quantum leap in oral arguments. Where did this quantum leap come from? And how did Goodell get there? And there's Second Circuit precedent from, you know, previous court cases not related to the NFL that says that the arbitrator cannot rely on some sort of outside thoughts or feelings to make his decision. And so Berman says, well, if Goodell is looking at the Wells report about general awareness, how could he have possibly found participation in a scheme? He must have used some sort of outside thought or feeling. And there's no way Brady would have had notice of that sort of thing. So that's the sort of the kind of ancillary issues. There's so many different issues under notice. Now, the crux of the notice issue that the NFL is upset about is Goodell's Article 46 powers, what we call his ability to punish for conduct detrimental to the league. And what Berman said is, look, you know, there's a specific provision in the collective bargaining agreement on player equipment policies that would govern ball deflation and tampering with equipment. And so Goodell has to use that policy to punish. He can't just punish for conduct detrimental for anything he wants. If there's a specific provision, he has to follow that. And you and I both know, having gone through law school, that in contract interpretation, specific provisions always govern over general ones. You know, it'd be like any infraction could be considered conduct detrimental. You know, if someone takes steroids, that's conduct detrimental to the league. But because the steroid policy already exists, the specific punishments, Goodell has to use that policy to punish PED users. He can't just use his conduct detrimental power. And so that's kind of the gist that, you know, Berman says, take a step back, Goodell. You can't just punish conduct detrimental for whatever you want. You have to use the specific policy that applies. So that's kind of the gist of his notice ruling. That's a complex, very complex ruling. And basically, this is the part of the ruling where it almost seems like Brady's attorney, Jeff Kessler, writes the decision for the judge because he finds for Brady on every single step of the way on this notice issue. And so that, you know, there's a lot to deal with in that notice issue.
Right. And as a lawyer, you know, if the judge is clicking off all your points, basically writing exactly what you wrote, that's a good sign.
Oh, yeah. And you can kind of tell in oral arguments, too, that he's kind of following along. The judge was kind of supportive, almost like a cheerleader to Brady's attorneys in oral arguments. And when the NFL's attorney gets up, he's highly critical and he's kind of interrogating him. You know, it's 20 questions about, well, why this or why that? And it was a totally different demeanor. But you can kind of tell, yeah, it's always great when as an attorney, the judge says, look, we're basically going to pull stuff from your briefs and going to insert that into our opinion. And that's kind of almost what Berman does here is basically rely mostly on Kessler's arguments. So the second part of the decision is fundamental fairness. And I think, honestly, this was probably Berman's favorite argument, judging how he treated it in oral arguments. But this is the idea that when the arbitration hearing came up, Tom Brady and his attorneys wanted to examine the interview notes of the people who did the investigation, the Wells investigation. And they also wanted to cross-examine Jeff Pasch, the NFL's general counsel, who was involved with editing the Wells report and was listed as a co-author of the Wells report. And there was this big dispute at the hearing where Ted Wells and the NFL said, well, Jeff Pasch was not super involved in the hearing. Wells made a comment saying, well, I don't really know what he did, but I think it was just wordsmithing. I think he was just shaping the opinion style-wise, which is kind of crazy to think that you've got this high-powered attorney who's very highly involved with the league and is only kind of editing for style. But and Berman was certainly skeptical of that. But what Goodell said is, look, we don't think Pasch was involved, and we don't think the interview notes are relevant, so you don't get to see him. And that's where he runs into problems, because Judge Berman says – there's specific Second Circuit precedent that says that you should have the ability to examine documents and witnesses that go to the basis of your discipline. And Brady did not have the opportunity to do that. And so that goes to the fundamental fairness of the hearing. And it wasn't fundamentally fair. So that's kind of – those are the two reasons that Berman fines for Brady and vacates the suspension.
Okay, yeah, and I think the average fan can understand that too. Just the actions seem strange in the context of you know, having Pasch being involved and then withholding him from, you know, the court and things like that. It just strikes people as strange, I think.
Right, and it's important to note too, you know, going back to what we said before, Goodell could have avoided all of this. He could have put this off to a neutral arbitrator, you know, kind of like he did in Bountygate. I mean, maybe Paul Tagliabue's not neutral, but put it off on somebody
right.
else. And the other person could have made these calls about excluding Pasch, about excluding evidence and interview notes. And if, you know, they didn't exclude them, this isn't even an issue in Berman's decision. And if they did, you know, you don't have people saying, oh, well, Goodell runs a kangaroo court, because it's some other arbitrator who did it, and it distances Goodell. But it just goes to show you his lack of judgment and his, you know, inability to see really what's best for the league.
Okay, well, yeah, great. That's a really good quick analysis of a complicated decision. So, yeah, thanks for providing that. Now let's turn to look at what happens from here. What's next for Brady's case? The NFL has already appealed it. Is that correct?
Yeah, the NFL has appealed, and so they've appealed it to the Second Circuit. There was a lot of talk of, well, would they try to request a stay? Well, basically, you know, what a stay is trying to delay his decision from going into effect pending the appeal. So they were trying to, you know, people were saying, oh, well, the NFL will be upset. They'll try to make sure Brady stays suspended. But it looks like the NFL is not going to request a stay, which is probably smart on their part, because they probably would have lost. To get a stay, you have to show irreparable harm. And since Brady can always serve his suspension later, the NFL is not really harmed in any way. You could kind of make the argument that the NFL's helped, because honestly, the eyeballs on TV sets on those games that Brady is going to be playing are going to be way higher from Brady playing. Of course, that's not a legal issue, but of course everyone's going to be watching Brady in his first few games to see how he overcomes all the distractions. And certainly the NFL wants more people watching their games. But so they're not going to request a stay. There's a kind of a discussion in the legal sports law world right now is whether they will request an expedited appeal, which they still can. It seems like they're not going to. It doesn't seem like they're in any rush. You know, it doesn't seem like, oh, we're worried about Brady retiring. Brady, of course, recently said, you know, I feel like I've got another 7 or 8 years left in me. So with that said, the appeal timeline you're looking at is about 10 months on average at the Second Circuit. So anywhere from 8 to 12 months, I'm thinking, you know, this is probably not going to get wrapped up until the end of spring 2016. I've said even I wouldn't be surprised if it gets delayed a bit and you see a ruling coming out kind of close to the beginning of next season.
Wow, that'll give people stuff to talk about.
Of course, yeah. That'll be, you know, hot topic is, you know, what if they come back in August and say, oh, we reverse. Of course, I don't think that's going to happen. But if they say, what if we reverse, and all of a sudden you bring into the discussion again Brady serving another suspension during the season, right before the season. So, you know, when you think about the timeline, you think, oh, that sounds like a long time. But you got to remember there's three rounds of briefs that have to get filed. The NFL is going to file its brief. The NFLPA is going to respond. The NFL is going to reply to that. And then you've got to have oral arguments. And then you have to have time for three judges to examine everything and make their decisions and vote and then write the decision and maybe, you know, a dissent if there is one and put that out. So that's a long process and they all have other cases going on. So that's kind of the timeline of how the appeal happens and what we're looking at for that.
Okay. And I know people are hesitant to do this, but do you have any indications of how you think this appeal will, the chances this has of succeeding for the NFL?
Well, I put this out on the Sports Esquires, and I think I'm on fairly solid footing on this. You know, I could be wrong. There's always the caveat that you never know for sure what's going to happen. But I would expect at the very least that Judge Berman's decision is affirmed by the Second Circuit on the issue of fundamental fairness. He's on very solid footing for Second Circuit precedent on that. He relies specifically on the case law. The facts are completely on point. So, you know, at the very least, I think, you know, his decision on fairness, on excluding Pash, excluding the interview notes, is going to be upheld. I think he's on solid ground on that. Of course, Brady really wants him to be affirmed on the notice issue. And I think it is true that the notice issue is the strongest point for the NFL, because there is a lot of case law that says that the arbitrator has the authority to determine what law of the shop applies. And Berman kind of steps in and says, Goodell was wrong about how he applied the law of the shop. And really what he needed to do is he needed to say the law of the shop requires notice, and he didn't do that. And so Berman's on a little shaky footing here, because he kind of jumps into and usurps the arbitrator's authority a bit to determine what the law of the shop is. But I think there's two things to note here is that, one, Berman didn't just rely on the law of the shop. There's also Second Circuit precedent talking about, you know, changing, you know, relying on outside feelings and thoughts, which Berman found that Goodell did to jump from the general awareness conclusion of the Wells report all the way to participation in a scheme that he ruled. And the second thing is that this wasn't just about Goodell determining which prior cases the NFL had weren't relevant. This was about Goodell completely ignoring a fundamental principle of the law and a fundamental principle of the law of the shop, of historical precedent in the NFL, which is that you have to have notice of your punishment. And really, if you look at it, without the concept of notice in the NFL, the entire collective bargaining agreement is a dead letter. You know, what is the purpose of having specific provisions on PED usage, on equipment violations, on fouls in games even? You know, what's the whole purpose of that if you're not trying to provide notice to players of what they're going to be punished for? And that's kind of the basic premise of sports as a whole, right? Like, you have to know what the rules are to know, well, if I break them, I'm going to get penalized. And so I think that this isn't just Berman saying, well, Goodell didn't apply precedent correctly. It's Berman saying Goodell completely ignored precedent. And I do feel like this is the weakest point of Berman's ruling, but also feel he's still on pretty solid footing here. And the other thing that should be noted is, we talked about it a little bit, but the notice ruling is so very complex that, and there's so many different legs to it, so many different points that Berman found against the NFL. All the Second Circuit has to do is pick one of them and say, we agree with Judge Berman on this, and Brady's suspension goes away completely, and the decision is affirmed on appeal. So I do think that Brady has a good chance of success, at the very least, of winning on fairness, but also on winning on notice and getting Berman's whole decision upheld.
Well, yeah, no, that's great. I guess we'll have to see in the next year or so how that all plays out. Okay, so just to wrap things up, why don't we just talk about what this loss by the NFL means for the league, for players, and for everyday fans? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Sure. I think for the NFL, it's a loss, but it doesn't mean as much as people think. People are getting very excited about this and saying, oh, well, the owners are going to limit Goodell's powers and everything's going to have to change. And both of those things may wind up being true. But this decision doesn't require the league or the owners to do anything. And the process can still stand as it is based upon the decision. I do think that the one hit to the league, aside from PR hit, which I don't think the league is really worried about, because they have all kinds of issues from concussions to domestic violence to, you know, you name it. But this loss does mean that Goodell's Article 46 powers, his ability to punish for conduct detrimental to the league, it does mean that those powers can't be used when there's a specific provision in the CBA that's applicable, or a specific NFL policy that is applicable in place of them. And that sounds like it should already be the case, but really it wasn't fleshed out by anyone before Judge Berman. So that is a limitation on Goodell's Article 46 powers. And realistically, I think if you look at maybe the biggest reason the NFL is appealing this case, it is to preserve Goodell's powers to punish for conduct detrimental. That's the big issue. And so that's kind of the big hit, is Goodell's powers are limited a little bit, but realistically, you know, that it's common sense that those powers should be limited in that way. In terms of the players, I think that obviously this is great for the players. It's great for Brady. He gets to play his games. He doesn't have to serve a suspension. But of course it's good for the players when it limits Goodell's power. More than that, this gives them leverage in future collective bargaining, you know, agreement negotiations. And so it gives them a little bit on the table to say, look, you know, this is now five straight victories we've had on major decisions, going back Bounty Gate, Ray Rice, Adrian Peterson, Greg Hardy, and now Tom Brady. We've got the law on our side. So it gives them more leverage to negotiate more limited commissioner power in the next CBA, maybe even try to get a neutral arbitrator written in there. And I think also, too, it provides a roadmap to the players for future challenges. So now players can recognize, look, when we get punished, let's pay attention to the process and then file suit. And it encourages players to do that because they know that, hey, there are judges out there who will find for us. And certainly maybe the NFL won't be so excited to file in New York anymore, knowing that Judge Berman may get the case. So there is that for the players. There is something, too, for them to be worried about, though, is that you look at what happened in this case, and we talk about how Jeff Kessler basically wrote part of Berman's decision because his arguments were so good and he was a masterful attorney, but he charges a lot of legal fees. So the Players Association spent a lot of money on this. And so while this does provide a roadmap for players, you have to sit there and wonder, how much more money can they keep spending on high profile challenges like this? So that's one thing to keep an eye out on. And then for the fans, I think, you know, this is good for the fans. You know, even if you hate Tom Brady, you hate the Patriots, you thought that, even if you think that, you know, he, you know, deflated the balls, and it's important to note, too, that Berman didn't say whether Brady did or didn't deflate the balls. He just talked about the process of the arbitration. But even if you want to see the Patriots, you know, take it on the chin, this is good for fans of the NFL. For one thing, most NFL fans hate Goodell anyway, so they want to see him taken down a notch. But also it limits Goodell's ability to punish your team and punish the players you root for, and hurt your team's ability to succeed. You know, when we talk about since 2011, this has been Goodell being overturned five straight times. Think about all these teams that have been affected. The Patriots with Tom Brady, the Vikings with Adrian Peterson, the Ravens with Ray Rice, the Saints with Bounty Gate, the Panthers with Greg Hardy. That's five teams. That's almost a sixth of the league, and that's in 4 years. So it's always great when Goodell's power is limited, because as an NFL fan, it means there's less chance that your team and your favorite players will get punished. And if there's anything we've seen from Goodell, is that he's no holds barred. He doesn't care what you think about your team. He doesn't really care about, you know, what the facts say. He's just going to punish them. So,
right.
You know, certainly this, I think, is a good thing for fans. It provides more safeguards for their teams, for our teams.
Right, yeah, and I grew up in Boston. I'm a Patriots fan, so I definitely feel good about the decision on a personal level as well as a legal one.
Right.
Okay, well, thanks for taking the time out of your schedule to record this podcast. I think we've discussed some important issues. As we've discussed, I don't think this story is going away anytime soon, but it looks like we've reached a point where the daily analysis perhaps will die down a bit. Do you have any closing remarks that you'd like to leave us with?
Yeah, I think that back in January, we posted an article on the Sports Esquire site when all of this news broke in the AFC Championship game and everything. And the story was, Deflategate is not going away anytime soon. And that was in January. So here we are in September, and the decision is out, and now we've got an appeals process that's going to take us on well over a year of this case kind of coming up. So I think that kind of mantra still stands to placate. It's not going anywhere. This will definitely be a case where things drag out and the legal side drags out. But I think that the takeaway from this case is the NFL made mistakes, and they just had opportunity after opportunity to prevent those mistakes, and they didn't. You look at other leagues, and this has been talked about some, but the NHL, the MLB, NBA, all those other leagues have some form of neutral arbitration. They all have some form of protection for due process rights for players in their arbitration system. Part of that is because the players have had better chances, better opportunities at negotiation, and have done better in CBA negotiations. But part of it also is because the leagues are willing to work with the players on those disciplinary issues. And the NFL has shown an unwillingness to do that. I think at the heart of this case is the NFL has been short-sighted, unwilling to relinquish power. It doesn't care about the good of the game and the due process rights for players. And you look at this from a labor law standpoint, as an employer, of course you want the advantage over your employees. Of course you want to make money and everything like that. But as an employer, you should care about the fundamental rights of your employees. And that's something that we've seen in this process and many others, the NFL does not care about. And so I think this is just an issue of the NFL has been short-sighted and hasn't really cared about the health of the league and its future prospects, because this is a PR nightmare, as everyone knows. And really, at each step along the way, they could have prevented this, and they didn't. And other leagues we should look to as a model to say, why can't the NFL get its act together? So I think this is really a big rebuke to the NFL and a chance for the NFL to say, we screwed up. How can we fix this going forward? I'm not sure if they'll do that, but it's an opportunity.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot. That's great.
Well, thanks for having me on. I just want to say I appreciate it. I've enjoyed interacting with you on Twitter, and definitely encourage everybody to keep following you and to keep following along with the Sports Esquires too. And we'll be covering all these stories and many more as we go along throughout the year.
Okay. Well, yeah, thanks for taking the time to talk with me today and being a part of the inaugural Sports Law Biz podcast.
Thanks, Peter. Thanks for having me on.
This has been an episode of the Sports Law Biz podcast. This podcast is available through the Sports Law Biz website or through iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and YouTube. Before wrapping things up, I'd like to thank some people. First of all, I'd like to thank my friend Lieb Montoya for designing the Sports Law Biz podcast logo as well as the Sports Law Biz blog logo. His artistic ability certainly surpasses mine. If interested, you can check out more of Lieb's work on Instagram and Twitter. His handle is at Lieb Montoya in both places. That's at L-I-B Montoya. Additionally, I'd like to thank the musical artist for providing this theme music that you're listening to right now. The artist is a band called The Losers. The album is entitled Young, Tough, Terrible. The track is Sports with an exclamation point. The label is Needle Drop Co. This music is available through a Creative Commons license of Attribution Non-Commercial 3.0 Unported. This podcast was produced and recorded by myself, Peter Ott, and you can reach me at my personal Twitter handle, at PeterJOTT, through the Sports Law Biz Twitter handle, at SportsLawBiz, or through email at sportslawbizblog@gmail.com. Any feedback is greatly appreciated. If you are interested in contributing to either the Sports Law Biz blog or podcast, definitely reach out to me. I love to talk to people about these issues, and I know I can use all the help I can get. Finally, I'd like to thank you for listening to this podcast. Hopefully it was enjoyable. If so, please spread the word and let your friends and colleagues know about it. Leave a review on iTunes. Any way you can spread the news about this podcast would be greatly appreciated. That's our episode today. Tune in next time to learn more about the law and business of sports. I'm looking forward to discussing it with you on the Sports Law Biz podcast.